Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. In the first hour of the program today, we'll be talking about a survey that was done this spring looking at the racial climate in the Champaign public schools. And we will talk a little bit about why it was done and how it was done and look at some of the results. And we have two guests here with us in the studio, both of them involved in the survey. Mark Hebert, he is professor of psychology at the University of Illinois, and Sasha Meinrath, he's a graduate student in psychology. And we will try to start out with the basics. Certainly, there has been some coverage. We have talked about this. There's been coverage in the newspaper. But we thought perhaps we might hear for this first conversation on the subject, try and just go back to the very beginning and say, why was this done and what was the intent and what did you find? And then on some future programs here, we'll see if we can get some other perspectives, sample the feelings of administrators and teachers and parents and so forth. And, of course, people who are listening can call in. You can share your thoughts with us, make comments, ask questions. That's very easy for you to do. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. And, of course, anyone, anywhere, if it would be a long-distance call for you, you can use our toll-free line. That number is 800-222-9455. So, again, locally, 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Being here.
Glad to be here.
I do want to start with just the absolute most basics on this. And so let me ask you, why was this survey done?
Well, this survey grows out of a complaint that was lodged by community members in Champaign about how African-American students were being treated in the schools and their performance, the outcomes that they were experiencing in the schools. The U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights visited Champaign and did a review of the district, which documented numerical disparities in disciplinary outcomes and academic outcomes for African-American students. Those findings were later corroborated by an independent review done by Dr. Peterkin from Cambridge, Massachusetts, who was hired as a consultant to do a more thorough investigation of the equity issues in Champaign. And basically those findings were that African-American students are grossly overrepresented in the disciplinary statistics in the district, so they're suspended and given detentions at rates far exceeding their proportions in the population. With respect to academic issues, African-American students are underrepresented in the gifted and talented programs, in advanced courses in the high schools. And they're overrepresented in special education and particularly the behavior disordered classes. There were other issues that the audit looked at, but those were the primary findings. And as a result of those findings, the district entered into an agreement with the U.S. Department's Office of Education, or Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. And as part of that agreement, they decided to conduct a climate survey to look at perceptions of parents, teachers, and students to try to get a sense of whether the climate is conducive to African-American students learning and what effect that might be having on the equity issues.
Mm-hmm. So you went and you designed a kind of a survey, a thing that can be done with paper and pencil, and passed it out?
That's exactly right, yeah. We before we got started, we looked in the literature to see if we could pull something off the shelf that might be an appropriate tool for this purpose. And it turns out, much to our surprise, actually, we weren't, prior to this experience, experts in this area of surveying climate with respect to equity issues. But we were surprised to find there's very little out there in the social scientific literature about how race matters in schooling in terms of measuring people's perceptions of that. And so we did develop our own measures, and we did it partly because there was nothing out there, but also partly because we really wanted to develop a measure that tapped into the issues that the stakeholders here in Champaign thought were important.
Mm-hmm. The survey, you surveyed teachers and administrators and parents and students, did everyone use the same instrument, or was it was different depending on who was filling it out?
It was geared to the individual audience. So we had, I think, five versions of the survey, three student versions, one for elementary students, one for middle school, and one for high school, and then a parent and staff version. So the teachers and administrators and other building staff that completed the survey all filled out the same form. Mm.
And altogether, how many people participated?
Oh, goodness. We have, I think, responses from roughly 6,000 students, 2,000 parents, and about 800 staff members. Mm. So representing roughly 90% plus of students, about 30 or so percent of parents, which that was a mail-in survey, so the return rate was lower there, and about 75% of all building staff on the days that we administered the survey.
Now, it's not possible to go through and talk in great detail about the survey, and if people are interested in seeing what the surveys look like, there's a website that people can access through the U of I Psychology Department, so you can actually see what the survey looks like. But generally speaking, what sort of things did you ask?
We were looking to measure issues that the community had raised as being particularly relevant for the equity issues. So we looked at people's perceptions of fairness, generally whether the kids and parents and teachers perceive that the practices in the schools and the interactions in the schools around discipline and academics were fair. We asked about perceptions of need for change, perceptions of what kinds of qualities desegregated schools should have to facilitate the learning of African American students. We looked at perceptions of respect and influence in the schools. A lot of stuff about parent involvement. Help me out here, Sasha.
There were over a dozen different domains were identified and were continual themes that came up in our discussions with community members that we thought, okay, these are things that are obviously important to the people that we were talking with. And so I think there's in total about 14 different domains that we identified as being very important to multiple different stakeholders and different constituencies in the local community.
I have a caller here, and I want to get to them presently. I promise that person I'm not going to make them wait too long. But let me just ask sort of the bottom line question, because it seemed that in a lot of the coverage of the survey and the results, the headline was big gulf between perceptions of whites and blacks. Is that true and yet not a very nuanced way to talk about the study, or is that truly the most important thing?
I think both of those things are true. Yeah. I think it's both true that from our perspective, and I think from the perspective of many we've talked to in the community, the fact that there are such pervasive differences in the perceptions of African Americans and whites across the samples, this occurs, you know, for the kids and the parents and the teachers, is the most significant finding of the study. That said, that's not a very nuanced description of what we found. We have a 30-page document that we presented to the district and hundreds of pages of tabled results that were submitted as appendices. So there's lots of fine detail here that you can't get, obviously, with a simple statement like that.
Mm-hmm. But generally, I guess what I come away with it is, and again, this is probably a great oversimplification, but that whites generally tend to say that they think, well, things are in the district are really pretty good, you know, not perfect, but really pretty good. And that African-American respondents, they're the ones who are saying, wait a second here. We got some pretty serious issues here that we need to deal with. It's not that their perception is that they say everything is wrong, it's overwhelmingly negative, but that they say there are serious issues to be dealt with, and those are issues that seem by and large not to be recognized by the white people who filled out the survey.
Right. I think that's right. One thing I think it's important to jump in and say right off the bat is that, you know, we have talked about these findings and continue to talk about them in terms of differences between blacks and whites. Mm-hmm. And it's important to remember that there's significant variability within each of those two groups in responses. So there are a lot of African-American respondents who look more like the average white respondent than they do like the average African-American respondent. Mm-hmm. And the same is true for whites. So there's a lot of whites who also see the climate in more negative terms than the average white person does. And I think that's important to keep in mind as we talk about these findings.
Sasha, you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to sort of illustrate what we were talking about, this gulf, with some numbers from the survey results. And this is in the perceptions of the need to change. And this means the need to change the school district to address racial inequities. And in this result here, we have, African-American staff members, about 6% say that there is no need to change versus, 6% feel that they're, sorry, let me start over here. Of the African-American staff, 53% feel that there is a need for change. Versus about 6% of white staff. Mm-hmm. And for parents, it's about 49% of parents, African-American parents, feel that there's a need to change versus about 7% of white parents.
So that's quite a significant difference. Mm-hmm. Okay. I tell you, I have a person here who's been patient, and we will get to them, and would certainly welcome others, questions, comments. Maybe real quick, I'll introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Mark Hebert. He's professor of psychology, and Sasha Meinrath. He's a graduate student in psychology here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and they were both involved in this survey of the racial climate in the Champaign Public Schools that was done earlier this spring. And your questions, comments certainly are welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Champaign, line 4. Hello? Caller there, line...
You have...
Yeah, there we go. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a few questions about some of the basic premise that's been raised. The first had to do with this concept of representative. They talked about that there were numbers representative in terms of those disciplined, the gifted programs, some other things like that. And I think it's worth at least examining whether that's a useful concept. In fact, whether that whole concept is a waste and gets in the way of looking at, one, is the disciplinary process itself working or not working? Is there inequities in the specific ways that specific disciplinary actions are taken, rather than this statistical nonsense, which is my own bias? And the same in terms of the gifted program. Are there inequities in the sense that people are making decisions that are not according to the rules for who gets into the gifted program or not, or who gets taken out of the gifted program. But I think otherwise, I think using statistical, quote, representation, close quote, is really a red herring. And I think that sort of snowballed in the whole premise of what's going on in the survey and in the questions and in what comes after that. So I'd like to hear some discussion of that, not just taking it for granted that that's the way it's done, because that's the way it is done often, and that's the problem with the way it's done.
Okay. Well, let's have the guests respond. Go ahead.
Clearly, there is a difference, I agree with the caller, between making statements about the numerical disparities that exist and paying close attention to the policies and practices that are implemented and whether they're implemented in a consistent way across all children. And I think the conversation does need to go to the latter, not stop at just talking about the numbers. But I guess I would have a difference of opinion with the caller in thinking about these statistics as sort of mumbo-jumbo or a red herring or insignificant, non-significant. I think any time we find significant, dramatic, as they found in Champaign, numerical disparities between any two groups of people that on outcomes that are important to us as a culture and as a society, we ought to investigate what they mean and why they exist. And the Office of Civil Rights takes that as their sort of launch pad for a closer scrutiny of what's happening in districts like Champaign. And I think that's probably an appropriate approach. It shouldn't be the end of the conversation. It should be the very beginning of it from my perspective. Why do these differences exist? We're not fighting in Champaign as we used to about whether or not these numerical disparities exist. We're trying to understand what they mean. And I think they do start that conversation in a useful way.
But don't they, if I could just add a point, don't they? What you're saying is that they mean something about the educational system. And what I'm wondering is if they reflect something that's much broader about the social system, about the socioeconomic system, and really are not something that when you're the educational system is the problem, then the educational system is where their changes need to be made. But really what you're talking about is wider societal issues.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think there's no question that our schools are embedded in a broader societal context that shapes what happens in them. And I think it's not fair to assume, and I don't think we'll ever find, no matter how what angle we take on this in terms of studying it, that all the differences that exist between African-American students and white students in our public schools can be attributed to the actual practices that are happening in the schools, independent of what's happening in the broader social context. But again, I think it would be a mistake to assume the opposite as well. It would be a mistake to assume that those disparities are simply a function of what's happening in the broader society and doesn't have anything to do with what's happening in schools. And as we talk to teachers and parents and students, they describe to us practices and experiences that they're having in the schools that are pretty specific to the nature of schooling and to, you know, they're connected to what's happening outside the schools, but they're experiences of interpersonal interactions and how they're feeling about being taught as a child, how they're feeling about interacting with teachers as a parent, that give me reason to think that it makes sense to pay close attention to what's happening in schools.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. I guess I find myself wondering, though, if this might not be another one of those cases where schools end up having to shoulder a burden for a social problem that they didn't create necessarily, and it's something where we don't really quite know what to do with it. So we end up, in addition to the other missions that we give to the public schools, giving them this mission to solve this problem that we really don't understand how to solve, or I'm not really sure what it's about.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone expects the schools, I hope no one expects the schools themselves to solve all of our social problems. At the same time, there is a lot that our school systems can do. I'll give an example of what's happened here in Champaign following the school climate survey, where they decided instead of choosing who would be tested for talented and gifted, they would just administer the test. And this isn't even talking about the issue of whether the test itself is or is not biased, but this is just they decided to give the test to everyone. And by doing this, they've increased the number of African Americans in the elementary school talented and gifted program by 400%. So that's a pretty stunning statistic. And I think this points to how sort of the processes within the school system can be improved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, I got some other calls we'll get to in just a moment, but that again goes to another question. The results were announced when the school year was still on. Now, obviously, the school's done now, but you think you can actually point to some things that did change as a result of the survey. It's not simply going to be a document that's going to sit on somebody's desk, but you think actually will lead to changes in how things are done in the schools?
We're sure hopeful that the district won't shelve these results. A number of administrators, the superintendent, former superintendent Mike Kane, a number of his assistant superintendents are on record, the school board's on record, as not wanting to do that. So we're hopeful that people will continue to pay attention to what these results mean and try to understand more about what's underlying them. But, you know, it's we're also realistic and about the limits of a simple study like this and moving an institutional monster like a public school district. But we are hopeful.
Well, let's talk with some others. We have another Champaign caller. This is line number one. Hello.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. One thing I found very interesting about the survey, and I'm just wondering, you know, how you're able to, you know, get any useful information out of this, but the perceptions of white students seem to more closely match that of the African-American population as a whole than than it did either the white building staff or white parents. And it occurs to me that, among other things, you know, these students are there on the ground in, you know, every day and seeing what goes on and experiencing what goes on. And, you know, is it that, you know, because of that, they have a clearer picture of what's going on and you know, you can glean something from that, or is it just because that they basically see themselves in opposition to the system itself? You know, I'm curious if you've explored that much.
That's a great question. We reported exactly as you described that white students do, in fact, see the climate more like some of their African American peers than they do like the parents. And I think you put your finger on two possible interpretations, both of which probably have some basis for this finding. I think it's both the case that students do, white and black, find themselves in opposition to teachers and schooling quite regularly, and so that is going to push their perceptions of the climate down towards being a little more negative than they would be otherwise. And I think they do have experiences in the school. They watch what's happening to themselves and to their black peers, and I think they might have a little different perspective on this than their parents do.
I find it, you know, very interesting that, you know, what you just pointed out, that they were making subjective choices before about who ought to be tested for the, you know, special classes rather than just giving everybody a shot at it. You know, that's pretty telling in and of itself.
Yeah, I think there are practices like that that need to be examined, and, you know, this is just one example of them.
Yeah, because, I mean, we all have biases even if it's not along racial lines. I mean, maybe we, you know, like somebody because we think they're better looking, or they just, you know, all kinds of variables, or maybe they're taller or whatever, you know, and that's a pretty dangerous thing when it comes to, you know, trying to get ahead in the world. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. I just want to make sure I got this. The African-American students and staff, where they were pretty much in line in those two groups, the young people and the teachers, they were pretty much lined up in their perceptions. But when you look at on the black side, students, staff, and parents, all African-Americans, all no matter who they were, pretty much all kind of saw things the same way. But that the white students tended to see things more negatively than their parents did.
Right, and more negatively than the white staff.
So
if you sort of lined up the groups, you'd find that the white staff have the most positive perceptions of what's happening in the schools, and the African-American staff have the least positive perception. Mm-hmm. And then strewn out between them are these other groups, and the white students tend to be, white parents tend to be closer to the white staff on the high end, more positive, and the students fall in between, the African-American students are closer to their to the black parents and staff, but the white students are closer to them than they are to their own parents, you know, on many perceptions.
All right. Let's go to line number two. This caller's in Urbana.
Hi, thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go back to the first caller's comments and say that I think, of course, this is a reflection of our society as a whole, but I also think it's perfectly reasonable that we might expect that our educational system would be improving on our society as a whole. I don't know what we would be spending billions of dollars on education for if it wasn't to make our society a better place. Isn't that what education is supposed to be for? But I would like to further comment that our educational system has many, many huge cracks in it that many students fall through. I mean, it needs to be improved itself in order to prevent all the students from falling through it. And I think it's of vital importance that it be improved because it's the main, absolutely most important filter that people go through on their way to adulthood in our culture. And it's where many, many people get the message that they can either do well in our society or not do well in our society. And since most of the children in our culture are forced to go through that system, it needs to be improved in order to improve our society. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the comment. You want to say anything about that?
I guess I would just pick up on her theme that I would agree that our public schools are an important setting for us to address many broad social issues. They're places where we're trying to shape the minds of the next generation. We're trying to give them some of the tools it's going to take to move our society in the directions we want it to go. So it seems an appropriate place to try to struggle with issues that are embedded in race and class in the ways that these are. I think it's also not fair to expect schools to do this by themselves, nor is it appropriate to think that all the problems that we're talking about in terms of African-American student achievement and well-being in schools is a function directly of what's happening in schools. But, you know, I've been very impressed following the release of these results with the community response to the study. And I think it's taught me something about how invested people are in their children's education. If you want to get people to start to think seriously about social change and hit them where it matters, parents care about their kids' success in school across the board. And so this is a place, I think, where we have some leverage to really challenge one another to pay attention to what are broader social issues and to have a concrete context in which to work them out some. So I think, you know, for example, having black and white teachers working together, talking to one another, trying to understand these findings and you know, interrogating their own practices is a very fruitful process.
Hmm. You want to add anything?
I think also what's important is that I think one of the mistakes that could be made with this is trying to define what is the correct perception or the right perception. Who's got their finger on the reality? And I think it's very easy to fall into that trap, but also it's not the way that we're looking at it. We're trying to figure out how is it that these multiple different perceptions, these multiple different realities of what's happening in the school system can exist at the same time. And so, for example, a lot of people said, well, what about poverty? What about socioeconomic status? How does this play into it? And I think one of the things that one needs to look at is how is it that for African Americans, as a whole, they can say, well, this isn't really the problem. And for a lot of whites, they can say, oh, this is the problem. And so we did a little bit of investigating of how do these two perceptions coexist. And we actually looked at suspension rates in particular. And when we looked at white suspension rates, high SES, high socioeconomic status, the richer you were, the less you were suspended. And so when you looked at sort of if you were to graph this, you would find that as your income went up, your suspension rate as a group went down. Now, for African Americans, it was a flat line. So it didn't matter whether you were low or high SES. It mattered not one bit if you were African American. It mattered a lot if you were white. Hmm. And so one can see how these two different perceptions between two different groups could actually both be correct, both occur at the same time, but not necessarily give a clear picture unto themselves as to what's happening across race.
We're a little past the midpoint. Again, just quickly, let me introduce our guest. The last person you heard speak was Sasha Meinrath. He's a grad student in psychology at U of I. Mark Hebert is here. He's professor of psychology, both of them involved in this survey that was done earlier this spring looking at the racial climate in the Champaign public schools. And your questions are certainly welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And we do have the toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, 800-222-9455. Here's another caller. This is Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi. I just finished up at Edison Middle School, and we had different kind of gifted classes there. And I honestly don't remember hardly any black people being in them. Maybe there were two this year. And, you know, it's pretty unfair because it's by teachers who they think is ready. They don't even give us a test or anything. And, you know, what are you guys going to, you know, do about that? And what's the school system going to do about making that more equal towards the other people?
Hmm. Well, we did talk a little bit earlier about changing in the testing policy. That is from going from somebody making a decision, well, maybe this kid should be in the advanced program and we'll give them a test to find out, so that now they're testing everybody?
I believe it's at the elementary school level. Okay. I'm not sure if it's continuing on to the other levels. I hope so. I do hope so.
Would that? Would you think that would be that approach would work as well with the older students?
Definitely, because there's people I know that are sure that they're horrible students when they're actually pretty smart. It's just that the teachers don't pay attention to them and don't give them a chance.
Yeah, I think that it would work. I would agree with the caller that whose call, by the way, I really appreciate. I think one of the things that's easy to lose sight of in all these conversations about schooling is kids' perspectives on what's happening. And that's one of the things we like a lot about our data is that we have the voices of many students represented. So I appreciate your calling. And I think you're right that there are lots of African-American students who would thrive in the Gifted and Talented program who aren't there yet. And the district, I should say that the district has signed an equity agreement with the complainants and with the Office of Civil Rights that specifies in pretty broad terms a number of directions that they're hoping to make progress. And it includes an evaluation and examination of what's happening with the access to the gifted and talented programs across levels and access to the more advanced courses at the senior high school level. So, but we got to keep on them. We have to monitor them as a community. We have to help them make that progress.
Okay. And one other thing, like for the way the teachers look at us, I mean, the teachers are scared to talk about race in class and they're terrified to, you know, if someone says something about it, they just immediately jump off the subject. And same with, you know, poverty and things like that. And I think that if it wasn't such touchy issues, it might be better.
Yeah, I agree. These are very difficult subjects for most of us to deal with. And we need practice at learning how to talk about them. Related to what you're saying, we heard in the comments about the survey, lots of people expressing a view that they think the best way to try to deal with race and to be fair about treating everybody fairly is to be colorblind.
Yeah.
They want to treat everyone the same. And I think that's a philosophy and a point of view that deserves interrogation. When we talk to African-American students and educators about the colorblind perspective, they're nonplussed by it, to say the least. They don't want to be treated like everyone else. They want to be treated as who they are, just like everyone does. And part of who they are in our culture and our society is being African-American, and that they understand that that matters for how people see them and how they're treated. And they think the colorblind perspective does them a disservice. And so I think being colorblind and wanting to be colorblind is connected to a difficulty examining what race means and a lack of comfort about it. If we go around the world thinking that it's okay to be colorblind, to ignore race, then we don't get the practice it takes to talk about what it means to be different.
Yeah. Well, thanks. And I hope that, you know, next year they maybe will fix the problems in the gifted program.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. I want to talk just for a second here, and then we have some more callers. But I'm interested in something that you said back in the first half of the interview when I asked the question about the headline being white people say system pretty good, black people say got some big problems here. And the fact that that was you said you agreed with the fact that that was true, but you know, that's if you look at it a little bit more closely, it's more complicated than that. And you said that, in fact, that there were some, you could find some African-Americans who tended to feel the way most white people seem to feel and the other way, which would suggest that something more than simply race is going on. Is there some way to answer the question, what is it, if there is something more than race? Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, I think that we have enough experiences, both as, you know, sort of social scientists and as a society to know that social class matters in this conversation, to know that gender matters, to know that most of the major social sort of identity variables are important with respect to how people view the world. So, you know, we all view the world through our own particular idiosyncratic lenses. We're all unique individuals, and we see the world through our own experiences. And some of those experiences, I think, it's possible to recognize how they're common when we share certain characteristics. So boys, you know, tend to learn things about the world a little differently than girls do. And kids who grow up in the suburbs learn about the world a little differently than kids who grow up in the city and in the country. And so there's lots of social identity characteristics that matter in terms of perception. And so it shouldn't be surprising to us, I don't think, that within any group that we might define, there's going to be significant variability. And we've learned a lot about what some of those other factors are, including social class. And in our data, social class does matter some, but not, again, it matters more for whites than it does for African Americans. So this is a place where if we control for, in a statistical sense, control for the impact of social class on people's perceptions, it matters more for whites than it does for African Americans. African Americans of all social classes tend to have a relatively depressed or negative view of the climate relative to or compared to whites, where there's more differentiation across social class. I think the status in the school, too. The African-American administrators in the schools tend to be slightly more positive. There's relatively few of them. We're dealing with small samples here. But I think there tends to be a little more positive perceptions amongst those African-Americans who tend to be in the dean's roles and in the counselor's roles as opposed to online teaching staff and other kind of staff.
Mm-hmm. Let's go on. We have some other callers here and just about 10 minutes left. So we'll go next to Champagne and line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I am actually thrilled to hear some discussion about some of the other differences and learning differences with children in school. For instance, gender, the boys definitely learn differently than the girls do, especially in early elementary. But one of the things that concerns me greatly is that with gathering statistics and looking at sort of what's going on in the schools, I haven't seen a discussion or an effort being made to look into parent involvement in school, because I know in our experience in, you know, 2 years in public school, and my son is hearing impaired, so we experience all kinds of discrimination, but I saw the parents that are involved at school every day, that are in the PTA, that are involved actively with things that are going on in the classroom, helping out in the classroom, helping out with school activities. There is a disparaging difference in the background of those that are involved and those that aren't. And why is it that that isn't being looked into when you're looking at social and cultural differences and why there seem to be these differences in school? You know, why aren't you looking at that too?
Right. We have a section on our surveys called the barriers to parent involvement, and I think this gets it right, what the caller is bringing up here. This is incredibly important. And it came up again and again in our discussions with community members that you need to look at parent involvement in the schools. And so there's actually its own section on the survey talking directly about, you know, how are parents involved in their child's schooling? What are the barriers to parent involvement in their child's schooling? We found that African-American parents are as involved as white parents for the most part. In their child's schooling, and that they value education at least as much as white parents do.
Yeah. I completely agree with the caller that parent involvement is important for kids' performance in school. The research literature has documented this over and over again. And the research literature has also documented the fact that it's harder for African-American parents and lower-income parents to get into school for a variety of reasons, having to do with having to work two jobs and, you know, sort of life circumstance kind of things that come with being lower socioeconomic status. But also for the sort of social reasons that, you know, sort of are at least implicated in a lot of the things we're talking about, where there's a lack of communication ease, let's say, between blacks and whites. And, you know, so there are barriers that have been identified in previous research that impact African-American and low-income parents from getting involved more than white and upper-income parents. As Sasha says, though, we don't find massive differences in Champaign on those variables for the most part. We do find that African-American parents and white parents report at about the same level that the schools are encouraging of their involvement. So if we ask them, you know, do the schools encourage you to get involved in this or that, they say yes at about the same levels. And if we ask them what kinds of things present problems for their involvement, they report at roughly equal levels the kinds of things that are barriers: transportation problems, problems with time at work, scheduling, these kinds of things.
And transportation.
Yeah, transportation.
Let me just interject and ask you this. And certainly my experience was different, and most people that I know, their experience is different. How much of your information gathering was actually, did you go and observe? Was this all done strictly from information that was collected in written surveys?
We've been working in other capacities in the school, so we have a fair amount of observational data that we've amassed over the, you know, just through our own experiences. But for this particular survey, it was a paper and pencil measure. That's what we had the resources to do. So
how much allowance do you make with statistics on bias and personal bias? And, you know, I mean, do you know what I'm saying? I mean, how much allowance do you make of this could be just someone's sort of blowing their perceptions, you know, their perceptions are different. I don't know. I don't know how.
You're wondering about whether or not people are reporting accurately what they really feel?
Yeah.
I think there probably is reason to suspect that people aren't being completely honest with, not everybody's being completely honest in their responses. When you have thousands of respondents, however, those things tend to balance out. So, you know, some people will over-report their involvement, and other parents will underreport it for a variety of reasons. So we think for the most part, those kinds of discrepancies balance out in large samples.
I think one of the issues that may be also happening here is there are many different ways to be involved in your child's education, and some of which seem to be more public and others which are more private. And so a lot of times, for instance, people think of volunteering in the classrooms or joining the PTA and being involved in a very specific type of way in their child's education as sort of and overgeneralize from that information, saying, well, maybe, you know, African Americans are not involved in their children's education as much as whites. But what we heard again and again from African Americans is, yeah, I don't go to PTA meetings, but here's what I do. And there are many, many different ways in which African Americans are involved and reported being involved directly in their children's educations that maybe are not as publicly seeable as what a lot of whites do.
I hope that does that kind of get at the questions you're asking?
Yeah. So thanks a lot.
Okay. Well, I would like to try and get at least one more person in here. We'll go to Urbana, line two. Hello.
Yeah, I had a comment and a couple of questions. One is that lady that called earlier saying that the schools should be bettering society. I would differ with that and would say that the schools are there to offer knowledge to the kids in order for them to live a full life, both personally and as citizens, which may have the indirect effect of bettering society, but it's quite a different thing. And I wanted to ask a couple of questions. I really liked the two statistics about the gifted program and the economic status thing and discipline, which goes to socialization in my point of view. But I was wondering if when you say that the gifted program ended up getting more black students when you tested everyone, is it therefore ruled out that those black students who eventually did get into the gifted program were underachieving up to that point, or not? I mean, you just kind of threw that out there without making any kind of follow-up on that. And I've got another question I'd like to try to squeeze in.
Well, let's get a response. We don't have very much time, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think we know much about those students who are now in the gifted program that were before. So we don't have any data that answers the question you're asking.
But actually, it could be that the teachers weren't just being unconsciously biased, but in fact, these students who were quite gifted may have also been underachievers to some extent. But anyway, let me ask this other question. From the very first caller who talked about, who kind of very tactfully skirted the question, what would eventually lead to my question, are you ever going to take the next step and find out, and I think I know the answer to this already, but I'll ask anyway, find out if indeed the black students are exhibiting the most disruptive behavior or not? I mean, whether or not there is bias in the administrations and the teachers or whatever, it could be that the black students are a bit the most disruptive and should and actually have earned getting the most discipline. And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate question, and I think it's by many measures that's true in our district, that the disparities in the disciplinary statistics don't necessarily reflect the fact that African-American students who aren't misbehaving are being disciplined, but rather that there is a higher rate of so-called misbehavior. I don't mean to say that all misbehavior is not important. Obviously, much of it is. But I think what these data suggest is that we should be trying to understand why that's the case. Why is it that an African-American student is not attending to what's happening at the blackboard and getting up out of their seat and running around the back of the room? Why are they not interested in what's happening in their classrooms? And I think there is some reason to believe that there is that the application of the rules isn't completely consistent. But I don't think that accounts for all the findings, as you suggest.
And I think it's also important to recognize that the norms for what is appropriate and inappropriate behavior, the norms for how people are taught and how people should learn, are set by a dominant white society that may not be in keeping with the culture or any other or many of the other ways in which African Americans learn. And there's a couple of people that have talked a lot about this. One is Lisa Delpit. She has a book called Other People's Children, which goes right to the heart of a lot of the issues we're facing here. There's an educational theorist called Gloria Latson-Billings, and she talks a lot about both colorblind and what it means to grow up African-American when the dominant role of teachers is telling you, I don't recognize race, I don't see your race. And there's a lot written about this sort of what happens when you have a culture immersed in this case, a white culture that really is in some ways in conflict with your own.
We're going to have to stop here. I'm sorry we can't keep going, but we've used the time. We'll do that with the promise that we'll be talking some more about this on future shows. But for the moment, we'll have to say thanks to our guests, Sasha Meinrath, Mark Aber. Thanks very much for being here. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Sure. And people who are interested, there is more information about the survey and survey results on the website of the University of Illinois Psychology Department if people want to take a look at it. So again, thanks very much.
Sure. Thank you, Dave.